is first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Welcome into First Up and welcome into the first day of December. That's right, the final month of 2021 has arrived. Where has the time gone? I feel like I've asked that same question first day of every single month for the last 21 months, but you know, I guess repeating yourself isn't the worst thing these days. I'm Aaron Korolnik, and to commemorate the first day of December, we welcome in a very special guest co-host from the Toronto Star, my good buddy, Dave Festchuk. What's up, man?
AK, nice to be here, my man. How's it going on your end?
Fantastic. Feeling good. I mean, was going to go down to the Raptors game last night. A buddy had a ticket for me, just couldn't swing it, had a couple of obligations to take care of, and my degenerate friends, who I talk about quite often, are just real beauties, you know? Like, these guys, like, love sports, love having a couple of beverages, and last night was no exception. So they go to the game, and they send me their bet slips from, like, you know, how they were, you know, thinking about things heading into the game. Like, clearly very Raptors biased, right? Like, oh, Raps are going to smash these guys tonight. No Ja Morant. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, Gary Trent's out. Ananobi's out. Like, where are the Raps getting the offense? It's not like they're some juggernaut. And the Raptors were 3-point favorites. Keep this in mind.
Yes.
So I'm like, yeah, I would probably lean Memphis. They're like, no, we're hammering Toronto. It's going to be a great night. And, you know, we all know what happened from there. I mean, Memphis took care of the Raptors. I don't think, did they relinquish a lead after the first couple of minutes of the game?
I don't think so.
So those boys had a tough night. Very tough night. And yeah, the Raptors now 2-8 at home. 2-8 at home are the Toronto Raptors. And I guess it's to be expected considering, you know, they're not that good. And they're missing a bunch of guys. They're very young, very, very young, especially without Ananobi and Gary Trent and Kem Birch. But it's not like Memphis is some juggernaut. That's probably a team you should beat at home.
No kidding. I mean, this was an indictment of exactly what you just talked about, the Raptors' inability to do the fundamental thing you're supposed to be able to do as a basketball player, which is put the ball into the orange rim. And this wasn't just a mediocre defensive team in the Memphis Grizzlies that rolled into town. This was the very worst defensive team in the NBA, AK. And the Raptors scored a grand total of 91 points against them. That is the definition of a bad sign.
Well, how about Scotty Barnes, who I thought, again, looked really good. And I think he had 19 points, 7 boards. His jumper is really coming along. The confidence, you can tell, is increasing game by game. He's shooting threes with more and more regularity. I think that's extremely, extremely appealing if you're the Toronto Raptors and if you're a fan of the Toronto Raptors. There was a couple of moments last night where he was hot-dogging to a degree that I haven't seen from any NBA player in a couple of times. Like when he stole the ball and like he's looking back at Steven Adams, like just kind of like messing around, staring him down, and then he dunks it. I was like, what are you doing? Just finish the play. Like, I don't understand. There's a couple of other instances last night, and I imagine Nick Nurse might have had a talk with his star rookie. Like, dude, tone it down a little bit. Well, we're 9-13 here. We can't win a game at home. Let's maybe focus on the fundamentals as opposed to showboating and showing up our opponents on our home floor.
No, that's a fair point, AK, but I'll say this. I'll take that spirit. I'll take that hot dog spirit over a lot of what you see from more established Raptors. You know, I'll take that over Pascal Siakam's regular sad sack routine. I'll tell you that. No doubt about that. So, look, Scotty Barnes, if you have to contain the jubilation and the joy in his game, that's a good problem to have. I'm never going to complain about a player who shows that type of moxie. But you're right. It's the most important development, I think, of this season. And we're kind of looking at a season here, AK, where, you know, whatever they do this year, and now it's not looking very good. You know, you've lost 3 in a row. You're 2-8 at home. You're 9-13 overall. And by the way, you've had one of the easiest schedules in the NBA to this point. You know, you really haven't played that many tough teams, and you haven't been able to beat teams like the Grizzlies, who came in limping as a defensive debacle. But the we're kind of in that situation, AK, where we're going to be looking for silver linings. And one of the silver linings, I think maybe the chief silver lining, will be Scotty Barnes. And to the point you just made, it will be the fact that contrary to reports that this guy could not put the ball into the basket, you know, he has a jump shot that to me looks very serviceable. Yeah. And more importantly, he's got a jump shooter's mentality where he's clearly not afraid of anything, let alone letting the thing fly. So it's not a Ben Simmons situation where he came in, he's afraid to shoot, he can't shoot, and it's going to be a career-long problem for him. He's going to overcome that problem, and that is a massively good sign for the Raptors.
I probably shouldn't have led being critical of Scotty Barnes because he's the lone bright spot last night on a night where there were very few. I mean, I guess when you go into a game and you're starting Svi Mihailuk, you probably should have pretty low expectations. And listen, we are the Svi Musketeers on this radio show.
Oh, yeah.
Cole Iacovo and I. We were big fans of Svi. He's kind of, you know, come back to earth since his hot start to the NBA season. But you're running out Yuta Watanabe for 28 minutes. You're playing Malachi Flynn for the duration of the fourth quarter. I mean, these are like, you know, let's just be frank here. These are not fringe. These are fringe rotation players in a real NBA team. So you're going to lose these games, and it doesn't get any easier for the Raps. They have Milwaukee coming to town on Thursday. So you're staring 2-9 at home in the face. And we've talked so much about attendance issues, and the Raptors aren't really facing, and I don't think the Leafs are necessarily either. And it's just one of those things where if you're going to do anything, just don't lose your home games, because the Raptors crowd and the Raptors fan base has been so supportive of this team in spite of playing last year in Tampa, coming home and putting on these performances seemingly night after night on your home court. It's just a really bad look, and I don't know what it is. I mean, the Toronto Argonauts, we have Enoch Mwamba joining us at 7:20. They can't lose at home. So maybe Scotty Barnes and Pascal Siakam need to give Enoch a call and figure out what they have cooking at home at the Argos and bring it to the Raptors.
Well, you just talked about how, you know, what has this franchise been known for in the Masai Ujiri era a lot of the time, AK? And a lot of time it's been depth, right? It's been sort of having this endless stream of guys, the bench mob era, having this, you know, this endless limit of options that Nick Nurse could kind of look down the bench and say, okay, I'll put that guy in. Okay, I'll put that guy in. This year, you look down that bench, and obviously injury is a part of it. OG Anunoby being out is obviously going to be a problem for you. And on down the line, Gary Trent Jr. has been a very effective defender, and he wasn't playing last night. But even with those guys in the lineup, you look down that bench, and there's just not a lot to recommend. I mean, not only are they the lowest scoring bench in the NBA, they're the lowest minute playing bench in the NBA because Nick Nurse is looking down there going, wait a second, like Masai, who you want me to put in here? Like, okay, Yuta coming back, very good sign. But when Yuta Watanabe is your, you know, your pride and joy off the bench, and last night he got 11 points and played pretty well. But if that's like Chris Boucher is, you know,
lost,
disappeared from the face of the planet in large part, you know, Malachi Flynn is not turning out to be the guy they hoped he'd be for a lot of different reasons. Delano Banton, you know, has been another good bright spot, but didn't do much last night and has had his ups and downs, as you expect from a rookie who was a second round pick with some obvious weaknesses that need to be shored up. But yeah, it's just not exciting.
No.
You know, you're not excited about that bench. And I think that to me is maybe one of the overriding concerns about this whole program right now, is that you don't necessarily, as much as you were sort of building your team as the best supporting cast in the NBA so that you could just insert a Kawhi Leonard type player into the middle of it and be a championship contender, I'm not sure that's the case right now.
No, it is not. And you talk about the bench woes for the Toronto Raptors, and it really kind of puts into perspective going back to the 2019 NBA Finals, the champions. Van Vliet, Ibaka, and Norman Powell were bench players on that team. How crazy is that to think about a couple of years later? And that's how you win a title. You have those guys coming off the bench and not Isaac Bonga and Malachi Flynn. That's the winning formula for an NBA champion. So that's the story with the Toronto Raptors. They're back against the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think Giannis might have a pretty good game against the Raptors front line, is my guess. I think you could probably put 30, 15, and 8 on the board right now, and probably a little bit more. He's going to feast on those guys because we know the Raptors' defense. It's certainly not anything to write home about. The Toronto Maple Leafs, however, what a game tonight. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche in town, they're red hot. They're getting Nathan MacKinnon back in the lineup, and they have currently, even without MacKinnon, the hottest forward in the National Hockey League, a man who played a long time here in Toronto. Of course, I'm talking about Nazem Kadri, who makes his return to Scotiabank Arena for the first time. Karolnik and Feschuk here on First Up, back after this. Back here on First Up, Karolnik and Feschuk this morning. Carlo will be back, I don't know, maybe Friday, maybe Monday, we'll see. We'll update you as we get status updates from Mr. Cole Iacovo. But if you were watching the Raps game last night, you may have seen a certain former Toronto Maple Leaf sitting courtside. Nazem Kadri back in town with the Colorado Avalanche. And there are very few players, if any, in the NHL right now who are as hot as Nazem Kadri. And he has points in 11 of his past 12 games. He is fourth in the NHL in scoring. I should mention he is a pending unrestricted free agent. So excellent timing for Mr. Kadri. But a lot of that has coincided with the absence of Nathan MacKinnon, who makes his return from an 8-game absence tonight. So the Leafs tonight, Dave, yes, they've won 14 of 16, but I would argue that Colorado coming to town is their stiffest test of the season.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, this is a juggernaut of a team. And Nazem Kadri right now, I mean, this guy is on, you talk about the Leafs heater, this guy, what is it, last 7 games, he's got 16 points. He's just reeling them off in a way that we never saw from Nazem Kadri when he was a Toronto Maple Leaf. What do you have, a 4-point night against Ottawa, about a week ago? He's had 3-point nights coming out the wazoo. This guy is just absolutely dialed in a contract year. And it does go to show, AK, like when you look at that, you know, that contract that Lou Lamoriello signed Nazem Kadri to, I guess it was 5 years ago, this guy's got a $4.5 million cap hit. He's due for a massive raise, it goes without saying, as a UFA this summer. But what a stroke of genius by Lou Lamoriello to get him under control for that kind of length of time in his prime. Man, that was one of the best bit of negotiating Lou Lamoriello ever did.
Absolutely, and I mean, it's great. He's an excellent performer in the regular season and then just gets suspended in the playoffs. So,
wow,
I mean, it's great to see him playing so well. We all love Nasty Nas. I mean, I remember back when I was at Western, I saw Kadri for the London Knights. He was the star there, and to see the way he's, like, you can even see he's looking more experienced, like an older gentleman sitting on the sideline of the Raptors game last night. I'm like, man, I am also simultaneously getting very old, and it's a humbling thing to see Kadri. But I mean, this is a kid, like, you know, Dave Poulin is going to join us at 7:45. Was part of the team that drafted Kadri with the Leafs back in 2009. And you think 12 years later, how excellent a player he's become and thriving, and this is his breakout year at age 31. And I think when Nathan MacKinnon is out and you kind of fill the void on the first power play and you're playing with Makar and Landeskog, sure, and Rantanen, it's not unforeseen to expect you'd pile up a number of points. But you're right. I mean, he's going to get a significant free agent contract, and I'm sure Colorado would love to bring him back, because you slot in MacKinnon and Kadri 1-2 down the middle, and all those studs they have on the wing and on defense, Colorado is as good a bet to win the Cup as anyone right now, and they're coming into Toronto on an absolute heater. So it's going to be a very tough one for the Leafs. But, I mean, it's not like the Leafs aren't on their own heater. 14 of 16. They seemingly can't lose if they try. Their goaltending has just been out of this world. Jack Campbell, a .959 save percentage in the month of November.
Incredible.
I saw yesterday that no goaltender had recorded a save percentage of that ilk since 1953 for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So it's something that is unprecedented, and he's going to need to be on the top of his game against Colorado tonight, Dave.
Yeah, you would assume. And I mean, I guess this is the time of year where we would, in many years, we would go back and look at the trade that sent Nazem Kadri to Colorado in exchange, of course, for the primary return on that deal was Alex Kerfoot. But Kerfoot has actually kind of muted that conversation.
Yeah.
Because this is, you talk about breakout years for Nazem Kadri, and no one's going to compare the numbers Kadri's putting up to the numbers Kerfoot's putting up, because Kadri's got, you know, 27 points. He's fourth in the league. And, you know, Alex Kerfoot's got 14 points. He's sixth on the team or fifth on the team in points. But Kerfoot's doing, you know, an awful lot to make you a believer that he's a fit here, because there's been moments and plenty of moments in the past handful of years where that's been in question. And I think Kerfoot playing well out of the gate here has been very good news for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And a lot, you know, a lot can be said for that because, you know, I wasn't sure about Alex Kerfoot. I think there was many times, you know, in the playoff failures where the Maple Leafs lacked that so-called killer instinct or edge or compete or grit, where you could have made the case that for all of Nazem Kadri's faults, and the suspensions were beyond faults, they were egregious, you know, sins that, you know, really couldn't be forgiven in the end because they really put the club behind the eight ball, so to speak. But man, Kerfoot, you know, was not a big factor in those losses. And Nazem Kadri is exactly the kind of guy the Maple Leafs were lacking as they, you know, turtled again and again to stiffer competition. So, you know, it's interesting. I think there's always going to be a part of the Leaf fan base. Whenever you write about Nazem Kadri, there's always Leaf fans that email you or text you or DM you and say, man, I miss that guy because, yeah, you know, he's the kind of guy you can fall in love with because he is human. He makes mistakes. He lays it out there. He plays with his heart on his sleeve. Alex Kerfoot, not so much, but I think Kerfoot playing the way he's playing is definitely turning that conversation into a slightly quieter one.
I can't believe you forgot the memory of Tyson Barrie's singular season in Toronto. What a year it was.
Good point.
A year it was. But I think you're absolutely right about Kadri. Guys, homegrown, drafted by the Leafs from, I guess not the Toronto area, but from London. And you could always tell, like, the offensive potential was there to be, like, really, really good and just explode for huge games like he has recently. And I guess he's finally finding his niche in Colorado. And, yeah, as we mentioned, he is a pending unrestricted free agent. So whoever his agent is has to be very excited about this coming summer. But Kerfoot is a guy who, I believe, I don't know if that still applies, but at least as of a game or two ago, was leading the Leafs in 5-on-5 points. Mm-hmm. And that's no small task considering Matthews, arguably the greatest 5-on-5 goal scorer in the National Hockey League. Mitch Marner's on the team. John Tavares on the team. William Nylander's on the team. And yeah, two of those guys are Kerfoot's line mates, but that's still, I mean, if you're going to find any fault in how the Leafs are constructed up front, I think Alex Kerfoot is the least of your concerns, or one of the least of your concerns. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he makes $3.5 million, but he has performed very much up to his contract. I think you could even argue exceeding it. And I think that goes back to the playoffs against Montreal. He was one of the Leafs' best forwards against the Habs in that 7-game series. He was playing high, like, he was playing 18, 19 minutes.
And, which, you know, may have been an indictment on the Maple Leafs forwards.
I think that's fair to say. But he's really carried that over from last year. And you'll see Kerfoot with Tavares and Nylander tonight. Bunting will play with Matthews and Marner. You'll see the season debut of Joey Anderson, who, mm-hmm, if you recall, was acquired, I believe, from the Devils for Andreas Janssen last year. He played one game last year. This is his first game this year. He'll play with David Kampf and Pierre Engvall. And Andre Kasha remains out of the lineup. What's the deal with Kasha? Have they kind of intimated what his issue is, or it's kind of, well, on the hush-hush?
Yeah, there was a question. I was on the trip in California, actually, and there have been questions about it. The idea that whether or not it's a concussion was front and center because, of course, Andre Kasha has an extensive concussion history. I believe at least 5 documented concussions, missed most of last year. I think played 3 games last year, you know, with Boston with a suspected concussion. But Sheldon Keefe said there's no indication that it is a concussion because Kasha has been working out, lifting weights, been skating on the ice. So it's an upper body injury, and they're not going any further than that. But clearly it's a massive concern for this team because Andre Kasha has been the proverbial Band-Aid throughout his career and really for all the great qualities he brings. And this guy is an absolute demon out there, an Energizer Bunny-type player, as Randy Carlyle once called him when he was playing down in Anaheim. Andre Kasha, you know, has not been able to stay healthy. And, you know, I think that is obviously a major concern for the Maple Leafs because he, with David Kampf, his childhood buddy from the Czech Republic, they really were making a case early in the season here that they were the third line, shutdown line, all-purpose defensive zone face-off line that you could throw out there and not be concerned who came over the boards for the opposition because they could handle themselves. And that's something the Maple Leafs have not had in recent memory. They've tried to, you know, they've tried to have it, but they haven't had it. And those two had the built-in chemistry. They gave you a little bit of the offensive upside. So Kasha getting back will be a big, big development if it indeed happens.
It's Leafs and Avalanche tonight on TSN 1050 at 7:30. Jim Taddy and Cheryl Pounder doing the pregame show. I believe that's Cheryl's debut with us, so very excited for her. Looking forward to hearing those two together. And coming up on the other side for us, Steve Phillips, our MLB insider. There is a lot of buzz with the Toronto Blue Jays for Chris Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember Chris Bryant, I mean, that would be quite the score. There's even buzz on Freddie Freeman, and he's a Canadian. Maybe he wants to return to his home and native land, Dave. And if let's not mince words, you know.
Okay.
We'll take whoever we can get. But
okay.
There's a lot of rumors surrounding the Toronto Blue Jays and some big name free agents. And the Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement expires at 11:59 p.m. tonight. We'll get the latest on the negotiations between the union and MLB as well. That's all coming up with Steve Phillips next on First Up. First Up continues here on TSN 1050. A big day and a big night ahead for Major League Baseball. At 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, the collective bargaining agreement officially expires. Players will be locked out, and that's the end of all of our fun for free agency, all the massive contracts being thrown around. But let's welcome in our MLB insider, Steve Phillips, to find out if maybe today we could be blessed with some more glorious content here on our show. What's up, Steve?
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you.
So thank you very much for joining us. Dave Feschuk in for Carlo this morning, I should note. And what do you think's going to happen today? Because we talked on Monday, Steve, and you said that free agents might need time to go and do their physicals. So do you think that guys like Chris Bryant and Marcus Stroman and Clayton Kershaw will be waiting until, I mean, if and when, and when a new CBA is agreed upon, or could we still see a flurry of action today?
I guess we could probably still see some deals. My guess is that if an agent believes that he's close with the team, he may fly his player in and have him local so that he can then do the physical and try to get it done today. You know, but if it's, Chris Bryant negotiating with the Washington Nationals and it's down to the Nationals and the Seattle Mariners, he's in a tough spot. What to do, fly to Chicago and try to be in the point where he can go in either direction and try to get a physical in. So I think it's going to be tougher today to get any big deals done unless the player's already in place to be able to get the physical, or they'll let the player go to the team doctor in the town that he's playing in to get the physical for the other team. And so we'll see what happens with it. But I suspect we're going to still see some action today, even if it's on some lesser one-year deals. We've got a new flurry of free agents out there with players who were non-tendered yesterday. And weren't extended contracts, so that adds them to the free agent pool. And so now there's more players out there, and maybe a few potential smaller deals could happen as well.
Steve, you mentioned Chris Bryant, and he is a name that has been circling in Blue Jays fans' heads for a long time. Now, he's a really, really good player, and there was a report yesterday from John Morosi who said the Jays were among the perceived favorites for Chris Bryant's services. Not really sure exactly what that means, but what do you make of the realistic chances that the Jays might be able to land him?
Yeah, so I think that the Mets have been in on him forever. The Giants really would like to have him back as he went over there and his versatility plays. I mean, there are reports that the Colorado Rockies have interest in Chris Bryant. Now, I don't know why he'd have interest in the Colorado Rockies, but, I mean, money talks. And so, you know, they have a belief they want to compete next year. Maybe they'll get in on it. Doesn't seem like it makes sense. But so I think the Jays, you know, they like his versatility, as do every other team. You know, Chris Taylor and Chris Bryant are getting a lot of play because they could fit every day at one position or at every position every other day. And so, you know, I think that value to a manager is there. And I think I don't look at them as a favorite for Chris Bryant. But I was also, surprised that the Blue Jays' name came up with Freddie Freeman. You know, Freddie Freeman's deal not done with the Braves, and everybody thought he was going to go there, but the longer that goes, and what we keep hearing is that Freeman wants 6 years at $180 million. Like, I'd give him 6 years at $200 million. I mean, to me, and the other thing we heard was that the Braves did not only wanted to go to 5 years on him, and I'm like, he's your guy. He's going to age well. He hits hard fastballs. You know, he hits the hardest pitchers in the game. He's going to age well, and you're going to get the DH in the National League most likely moving forward. So why wouldn't you sign him to a 6 year and get him locked up? So, you know, but the longer that goes on, it opens the door. When players start to try on a new city, you know, and their family starts to think, well, you know, that would be kind of interesting. You know, if we go to LA, it'd be kind of closer to home for Freddie where he grew up. Or, you know, if he went to Toronto, it would connect to some family ties for him. And so I think that there's, you know, you start to get people to experience it, and especially the wife and kids, then it could be exciting. And so we'll see what happens with it. The Yankees are probably in on that. You know, Scherzer probably never thought he'd see himself pitching in New York, but he's tried it on, and it felt right, and so here he is. Now, so did $43 million. Per year. But, yeah, so I think that this is still wide open with a lot of the stars in the game.
So Freeman is an interesting one, and one I'm interested that you're surprised to hear his name surface in connection to the Blue Jays, Steve. But when you look at a guy 32 years old, I mean, I could see Alex Anthopoulos, of course, negotiating as the GM of the Atlanta Braves. I could see why Alex would be saying, I don't want to go. You know, 5 years is one thing, but 6 years and beyond is a little scary for me for a guy in his 30s. But why doesn't it worry you as much, Steve?
Well, I think that one, he's as dedicated a player as there is. Two, you know, when players hit the elite fastballs, that to me means they're going to age well. You know, it's when guys start to lose that electricity in their body that they can't hit, you know, they don't hit the hard stuff now. Then when they slow down a little bit, it's going to make it that much more difficult. But Freddie Freeman uses the whole field. He's not a guy that, you know, is a dead pull hitter that relies just upon strength. He can hit for average and power. He takes his walks. He keeps himself in tip-top shape and condition. He's a guy that will always be motivated. You know, and in Atlanta, like, that's home for him. And, you know, to me, he's a guy that should start and finish his career with one team. And it sure feels like that should be the Atlanta Braves, that he should be their next Chipper Jones. So even if you're willing to go 5 years with him, then the sixth year, he's still going to be, even if he's not the same guy, and he is your guy. Like, he is. Here's the thing. If they lose Freddie Freeman, the fan base there, the joy and excitement and the karma around winning the World Series will be gone. Like, it will, they will turn. They just won a World Series. And if they lose Freddie Freeman, they're going to be mad at the organization and everybody's going to be down about it. To me, it's just a no-brainer. Like, I would easily give him 6 years, $200 million. I think he's that caliber of a player, and the 6 year does not worry me at all.
Steve, what's happening with Marcus Stroman? I mean, we know Gausman signed. We know Robbie Ray signed. Gausman J, Robbie Ray, a Mariner. We haven't heard that much about Stroman and where he could land. Who are some of the perceived suitors for him? And would his deal be in the same market as Gausman and Ray?
Well, I had him in the same range. I had him at 5 at 110 or 5 at 100, somewhere in that range. But what's interesting is, and this is always something I would do, is I would look at the team that had him, how are they pursuing him? And, you know, it appears that neither the Blue Jays nor the Mets really had him on their list to pursue. And, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, popped Kevin Gausman when they did because they didn't want to lose out on Ray and Gausman and have to go to the next in line there. And so I think that there's a market for Stroman. The Angels are in. The Red Sox are in. The Rangers are in. The Cardinals should have been in on him. You know, they got that great infield defense, and you got a ground ball pitcher. But, you know, Stroman's not the analytics darling because, you know, today everybody likes swings and misses. That's not his game. They like guys who throw at the top of the zone and then the bottom of the zone. He really only throws at the bottom of the zone with his two-seam fastball to get ground outs. But he's really good at what he does, and that's he's a ground ball pitcher, keeps the ball in the ballpark, gets double plays if guys get on. He competes and he takes the ball. And so he's a guy that could bring a level of predictability. I think he'll end up getting a five-year deal from someone, and don't be surprised if Texas is the team that does it.
Oh, baby. Texas loves throwing around the cash. Semien, Seager, what's another $100 million?
Yeah, it's crazy.
No big deal, for sure. Thank you, as always, Steve. And I imagine the next 17, 18 hours leading up to the expiration of the CBA will be very busy for you. So we appreciate you taking some time for us this morning.
Always my pleasure, guys. Good to talk to you. Have a good day.
Right. That is Steve Phillips, our MLB insider. What Steve said about Freddie Freeman and kind of how maybe the goodwill of the fans may maybe go up in smoke. Maybe I'm kind of misphrasing exactly what Steve said, but it reminded me of the LA Kings after they won their cup. And like, oh, Mike Richards? Sure. How much money you want? Like, oh, yeah, we need to keep our guys together. You know, it's be like, oh, these guys for what they did. And
yeah.
Dustin Brown. And there were more that I'm not remembering. This is probably close to 10 years ago now, but it's a dangerous proposition when you reward guys for past performances. And I still think Freddie Freeman's going to be great next year and probably for years to come.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't really necessarily. I think if you start placating to fans' desires and who they love and being a part of a franchise for a very long time, I'm not sure that's the best course of action for a manager, but that's kind of how I look at that Freddie Freeman situation.
Yeah, I'm with Alex Anthopoulos on this one. I mean, the idea that a 32-year-old player is going to get a six-year deal, I mean, that seems like a stretch to me. I mean, I guess, you know, 5-6, they're very similar. But, yeah, just tacking years on to guys in their already into their 30s sounds scary to me. Now, it was, you know, interesting Steve's take that a guy like Freddie Freeman who hits the fastball well already at age 32 – has that fast twitch, electric type of explosive ability. You know, maybe he's going to be immune. But we've seen, you know, guys like Jose Bautista, who was on top of fastballs at one point in his 30s and then just suddenly could not keep up with the fastball later into his 30s. You can see that decline really quickly in fastball hitters, especially in an era where guys are throwing 100-plus on the regular. So, you know, I agree with you, AK. It's a quandary for a GM because, you know, to your point about the Kings, I remember speaking to Dean Lombardi, who was the GM of that LA team, and one of his points was if you don't reward guys for giving their blood, sweat, teeth to the Stanley Cup effort, then what does it do to your locker room? What if you've got this culture that, you know, you're going to give everything you have and raise banners. They raised two banners in the span of a few years there in LA. If you don't reward that with contractual make good deals, then you got another problem on your hands.
It's
so
true.
It's not exactly it's not as easy as it sounds to say, no, we're not going to give up money for guys who've done us great services and won us World Series, because guess what? The alternative to that can be dangerous too.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not a cut and dry situation as a manager. That's why, you know, Alex Anthopoulos is paid what he is, and that's why he's held in the esteem that he is, because that's a tough situation, because this man is an icon in that franchise. They just won a World Series, and now Freddie Freeman's a free agent. He has, you know, a lot of options out there. There's a lot of suitors who wouldn't want to bring Freddie Freeman in, but I guess the question is Freeman maybe using the media to his advantage? Maybe make Atlanta try to get the fan base up in arms, and all of a sudden Anthopoulos is like, all right, what do you want, Freddie? Come on back to Atlanta.
I mean, but doesn't it almost seems like a tailor-made situation where somebody's going to overpay? Right, and you don't want to be that GM. On the other hand, you know, for an ownership like the one that owns the local ball club that plays down at the Dome by the Lake here in Toronto, they're looking for a PR win, right? After the PR disaster that was the story in the Toronto Star that said Edward Rodgers was trying to quash the Masai Ujiri signing. Edward Rodgers, you could see why he might be willing to tell the men who run the Blue Jays, hey, open up the bank vault here. I need a win here. I need some goodwill back in my corner as the beleaguered guy that's running Rodgers. So, you know, I wouldn't doubt that the Blue Jays are in the mood to pay a little more than they otherwise might at this particular moment in the history of that franchise?
Well, I think the PR thing is definitely a part of it, but it's also how the Jays are legit contenders to win the World Series as soon as this year. I mean, I think if there is a time to go in and spend some money, it's when you have a chance to really break through and win 90-plus ball games again in the playoffs. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And the thing that is most endearing to me, and listen, I think this is a lot of media construct, but it sounds, at least based on the MLB insiders on Twitter and social media, the Jays have been in on basically everybody, right? We heard Syndergaard. We heard Robbie Ray. We heard Stubbs. Jays are making moves on Semien. They're not out of it yet. And maybe the Jays are playing this game very well, and we'll see what happens with guys like Chris Bryan and Freddie Freeman and Chris Taylor and all these guys the Jays are still reportedly in on. They're not ruling out, you know, stuff in the starting pitching market and the relief market. Is that a way to placate your fans and make sure that Ross Atkins is getting the message out? Hey, everybody, we're still working hard. We're willing to spend money. But, you know, there's a lot of competition for these top guys. We just couldn't get it done. And I think that's a strong element of this whole thing, too. It's a PR game as much as anything where but ultimately, you know, you lose Marcus Semien, who hit 45 home runs for you. You got to find a guy to fill that void, and that's easier said than done. That goes without saying. But if you can find a way to slot in a Bryan or slot in a Taylor, maybe slot in Freddie Freeman, you might have to move Vlad back to third base.
I was going to say.
I don't know how the reigning Hank Aaron Award winner as the best hitter in Major League Baseball would feel about switching positions, but
you don't want to do that.
But interesting times for the Jays.
Well, look, I mean, to your point about, you know, the PR aspect of it, yeah, there's no downside for you as a GM to leak to one of the insiders that you're in on a guy, right?
Or everybody.
Why wouldn't you want to be in on everybody? Why wouldn't you want to be in on all the interesting negotiations out there? Because, A, to your point, it excites your fan base. The only way you wouldn't want to do that is if you have no intention of signing any of them. But as long as you're going to come out with, you know, pull one of the big fish out of the water, you don't need to pull them all out, but you got to get one of those big fish at some point to placate the fan base and excite the crowd in the lead up to another season where, you point out, AK, this team has legitimate aspirations as a World Series contender. There's no doubt about that. You're right. It's not just one thing. Like, there is the PR aspect to it, and the ownership could really use a shot in the arm in terms of its reputation around town as a sporting entity as much as anything. We know they're a business juggernaut, but as a sporting entity, their sporting IQ, let's say, could use a shot in the arm at this point. Something like a big signing, like a big name like a Chris Bryant or a Freddie Freeman, even if you overpaid a bit, you know, maybe that overpayment would be worth it at a moment like this. On top of the fact that those guys could contribute in the very near future to a team that has a chance to do very well on the field.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see how this whole CBA expiration plays into the next, 17 hours or so. And again, before midnight, the CBA expires. Can we expect anything today from anyone, any of the big names?
I bet.
Carlos Correa or Trevor Story or Stroman or Kershaw or Chris Bryant, like some massive names and some big numbers are going to be handed out. I think it's just a matter of if it's today or if it's whenever that CBA
months down
situation.
The line. Yeah,
be a while.
We may be very disappointed on that one. You're right, because look, do I think that this labor stoppage that we're about to incur in baseball is going to, you know, cost games? I'm not convinced of that. It doesn't seem like they're, you know, in that kind of a mode where it's a death march to an inevitable stoppage that's going to, you know, push back spring training and shorten the season. But I do think it's going to cost us months here in the winter when there's no real urgency, AK, to get a deal done.
A big contract handed out yesterday in the National Hockey League. Jack Hughes getting $8 million a year by 8 years. That was surprising to many, but mostly just the amount of money that Jack Hughes has received considering his relative inexperience. That's one of Koliakovo's main pet peeves, Dave. A guy like Jack Hughes was not proven much. Yeah, number one overall pick. Outstanding talent. I think he's going to be a really good player in the future. But, you know, you didn't necessarily earn this contract. It's all about future performance. So we'll talk about that with Dave Poulin at 7:45. And Brendan Lemieux, the suspension is official. 5 games for biting Brady Tkachuk. Too much, too little. We'll discuss it next on First Up. back here on First Up. And Dave, I think that we all expected the suspension for Brendan Lemieux for biting Brady Tkachuk to be severe, and we knew it was an in-person hearing on Zoom, which I still find it's an in-person hearing, but it's on Zoom, so it's actually not in-person, right. But it could be five games or more, and it was five games, and when you look at the incident, and you re-watch it and replay it, and you see the biting, and we'll play you the audio a little bit later from NHL Player Safety to explain the suspension in their little video demonstration. I was really surprised he only got five games, man. I thought it was going to be closer to double digits because what Brendan Lemieux did, and not only one time, multiple times throughout that little scrum with Brady Tkachuk, he bit this dude with intent and with purpose and with a voracious appetite. Five games to me seems a little bit on the light side.
Oh, it's a lot on the light side.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy... You're right. Like there's no mistaking what happened here.
No, it's a joke.
And look, there's been, I've delved into the biting issue a few times in my sports writing career. I remember writing a piece, 2015 Stanley Cup Final, when Andrew Shaw was accused of biting Victor Hedman, in one of the, I think it was one of the early games in that series. And I remember revisiting the idea that Brendan Lemieux is not a first generation biter. Brendan Lemieux is the son of a notorious NHL biter. Of course, Claude Lemieux, who was accused of biting the finger of Jim Poplinski in the Stanley Cup Final way back in the 80s. So the idea that you got a second-generation biter who has video evidence out there of him biting a guy basically unprovoked, because it wasn't one of these situations where there is one excuse for why you would bite somebody that I've heard from NHL players that holds water with me, and that's if a guy is attempting to gouge your eyes out in the bottom of a scrum, which apparently happens, AK. I've never had the experience, thankfully. But if a guy's doing that and your only way you can defend yourself is to get your teeth on his digits and tell him to back off in a very astute way, that I get. But this was not that, right? Brendan Lemieux was not under threat here. He was not at the bottom of the pile with no defense, with his arms tied behind his back. He chose to bite the guy. Five games to me is way too light here. This should be 10 to 15. Because if you're not sending a message that biting is unacceptable, AK, then what is the Department of Player Safety up to on this one?
Well, congratulations to the Lemieux family, the first father-son duo to both be suspended for biting opposing players. That is quite a family accomplishment. I saw a good video. I think it may have been Ryan Whitney on Spittin' Chicklets talking about the disdain that the Lemieux, Claude Lemieux, and Keith Tkachuk have for each other. I think they fought at the World Cup of Hockey in 96. Apparently those two just hate each other, and that has reverberated to their children. I think Ryan Whitney was saying something how Claude Lemieux and Keith Tkachuk probably just sitting at home telling their kids, I hate Claude Lemieux, I hate Keith Tkachuk, and all these years later, I mean, that disdain still remains between those two families. And for Brendan Lemieux, he decided to use his teeth as the I guess, kind of the aggressor and not maybe his fists. Probably should have just dropped the gloves, you know? Inside, I'm sure Brady Tkachuk would have taken him up on that without a doubt. The biting is a cowardly act, and five games far too lenient, if you ask me.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I remember speaking to Jim Poplinski about Claude Lemieux biting him. He bit his finger, and Poplinski apparently pulled his finger out of his glove, and it had teeth marks in it, and it was bleeding profusely. And he showed it to the referee, I think it was Denny Morrell, and he said, hey, Denny, Claude bit me. And Denny Morrell, the referee, according to Poplinski, said, how do I know you didn't bite yourself? And Poplinski said, because I'm not stupid, Denny.
Yeah.
But that was the mentality of the NHL back in those days. And I guess it's the Department of Player Safety saying, hey, we're not exactly sure what happened here. Maybe he bit himself.
Well, I think the difference is these days we have reviews and all these high-tech cameras where it was pretty obvious what happened between Brady Tkachuk and Brendan Lemieux. We'll talk about that with Dave Poulin at 7:45. Enoch Mwamba of the Toronto Argonauts coming up at 7:20 ahead of their Eastern Final against the hated Hamilton Tiger Cats. That's right, Mark Rowe. We hate the Tiger Cats here on TSN 1050. We will have the game for you on Sunday afternoon. I will be down there at BMO Field, sitting with Al's brother, perhaps, Unlikely. Very unlikely. He's far too big if I'm lucky.
I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, nor do I. Corona can fast track here on First Stop. Hour two coming up next.